He holds the future. Hello, this is Zdravko Stefanovic from Walla Walla College School of Theology. Welcome to Probe, our weekly radio program that focuses on biblical topics and discussions. Today we are continuing a series of topics based on one of the most important books of the Bible, the Book of Daniel. To help us explore this book, I have invited two of my colleagues to join me in the discussion, Dr. Dave Thomas, Dean of School of Theology, and Ken Bramlett, a doctoral candidate at the University of Toronto, Canada, who specializes in archaeology and teaches at present in the School of Theology. Welcome to both of you, and thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Our topic for today is the second chapter of the Book of Daniel. And before we go into that, just a few observations on the previous chapter. In the previous chapter, we talked about a reversal in Daniel's life. He came to Babylon as a captive, but then at the end of the chapter, because of his faithfulness to God and because of God's sovereignty over the events in history and his life, Daniel is promoted, and he joins the rank of those who serve the King Nebuchadnezzar himself. He is commended for his knowledge, for his success, and all of that is presented in the first chapter as a blessing from God. Now, in the second chapter, we find that it's no longer Daniel who is in focus in the beginning of the chapter, but it is the king, the emperor. And what we find in chapter 2 is a fascinating story that is again presented in the form of a reversal. And also we have a report of the vision by the king that happened in the second year of his reign. So we have a story, and we have a dream or a vision that is given to the emperor, and we'll try to address both of these. So let's begin with a very simple question, and that is there another reversal here in this chapter? What happens to the king in the beginning of the chapter, and how do we find him reacting toward the end of the chapter?
Well, I see a reversal, at least for Daniel. He's essentially a student learning his classes that he's been studying, and then suddenly he becomes advisor and interpreter to the king himself. That's certainly a change in fortune.
And there's a reversal for the wise men, or the so-called wise men, the counselors, who have been living. You know, as I read this chapter, it seems like they had a very good thing going, that they could sit around the throne room of the king and give advice when called in, but the king, because of his vision that they couldn't interpret, they all face death, which is quite a reversal, huh? You must have another one in mind, Zdravko.
Yes, then a positive reversal.
Yes.
That from that type of situation, God actually rescued them. The God of Daniel did.
Yes.
Through Daniel's intervention.
Yes.
That's marvelous. Now, in regard to the king himself, when we begin the chapter, we find the king afraid, angry, and even making a decision, verdict, that all his wise men should be executed. But at the end of the chapter, his mouth is full of praises to God.
Yes, so there's a reversal for the king as well.
That's right. So many reversals in this chapter, right? Well, let's get back to the story. The king goes to bed, and he has a dream. Can we explain the reason for a dream like this one? Do we have any indication in text what kinds of thoughts were in his mind when he went to bed that evening? Let's just remember for a moment that Nebuchadnezzar is known at this stage in his life and reign as Nebuchadnezzar the Destroyer. He goes around. He brings a lot of destruction. He would like to make sure that Babylon is established as an empire. And, of course, people had to be drafted into the army. Heavy taxes are imposed and so on. So what was on his mind that evening?
Sounds like some sort of midlife crisis, as it were, a mid-kingdom crisis. He has conquered the world, and now he is worried about his future. Mm-hmm. Will it last? Mm-hmm. What will happen during his final days and after him? He wants to guarantee that his glory will endure.
I'm tempted to say here that most likely people who are very autocratic, like in this case Nebuchadnezzar, there is one thing that they are afraid more than anything else, and that is the future. Because the future is unknown.
Yeah. And why do you think that's the case, Rocco?
Because they can control maybe the population of the whole world. They can control many things, but their life tomorrow is in the hands of someone else. I lived, for example, in the Philippines at a time when there were many attempted coup d'etat, and President Marcos, he was replaced by President Aquino. Then her government was very often challenged by others who wanted to take power and so on. So I could see a lot of uncertainty when it comes to political life.
And plus there's the issue of human mortality, you know, even if you set up a great kingdom, you're not going to live, you hope it will exist longer than what you live. You know.
So the dream that the king gets that night is an answer from God, what is going to take place, and what was basically the lesson that he was supposed to get from that dream.
Well, he receives assurance and a reality check at both at the same time.
That he needed at that time.
He did, yeah.
Right. Basically, the assurance was that God is in charge overall.
But do you think Nebuchadnezzar would see that as assurance?
Well, his...
Not without Daniel's interpretation.
At least the recognition of himself as the head of gold.
Well, yeah. Yes. Yeah, but I mean, you look at what happens in the next chapter, is that he doesn't seem to take that news too well.
He wanted to make adjustments.
Now, there are commentators who consider that what happened in the following chapter may have happened at the instigation of the wise men that were around here or other dignitaries. We do not know. The text does not specify. But it seems, at least as far as this chapter is concerned, that he's satisfied with Daniel's explanation.
Yeah.
Especially the way in which Daniel begins his speech. He opens his speech before the king.
I think that's a very important point you made, Shravko. That I think should be elaborated on a little bit.
And that's exactly what wanted also to suggest, that we look at Daniel as he appears before Nebuchadnezzar. What kind of attitude does he have? We see Arioch, the king's servant, who comes before the king, and he takes credit for himself. I have found someone who has a solution to your problem. Yeah. Well, does Daniel come also before the king and says, King, it's all about me?
No, he goes out of his way to point out that this is not his own devising, but that God graciously made it known to him.
And what is nice about Daniel's speech is that the speech opens and closes with Daniel's God. And I have found the same in King Nebuchadnezzar's words here. When King Nebuchadnezzar gives a credit to someone for the successful resolution of his problem, he praises actually the God of Daniel before he showers gifts on Daniel. Mm-hmm. Do you agree, Kent, with this?
I do. I think it's profoundly out of the tradition for that sort of response that Daniel presents to the king.
Mm-hmm. What about what Daniel says about God, that he is able to know, he knows the future?
That's right. And especially he gives praise to such a God in the hymn of praise that is found in this chapter. It is probably appropriate for us to read at least a few lines from this praise. Praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He sets up kings and deposes them. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. And in the second half, Daniel, in a more specific way, gives gratitude to God because of what God had done for him specifically.
Mm-hmm.
One more thing that we could have mentioned is in regard to Daniel's attitude that before he deals with a problem, he actually organizes a prayer meeting with his friends. And
I've always thought there must have been quite a prayer meeting there because they were all facing death.
And they were seeking, the text says, that they were pleading for mercy from God that they will not die. Well, God intervenes, and we have already talked about Daniel's speech before the king. Let's come to the interpretation of the dream that Daniel presents to the king. What did Daniel say about the end of times? We can see that in addition to the beginning of his interpretation, it is the end on which he elaborates much more than on the other parts. He seems to be go very fast over the details of the dream. Basically, in the dream, the king saw a statue, imposing statue, made of composite elements. And now Daniel explains that the legs and especially the feet and the toes, they represent the end of times when God's kingdom will come into full force and basically rule over the whole world. So what are the characteristics of that end?
An interesting contrast, I think. The head of gold and Nebuchadnezzar's desire to have an everlasting kingdom, and then you arrive at the stone, you know, that smashes the feet, and then there is an everlasting kingdom, but it's not the one that Nebuchadnezzar expects. And yet he comes to terms with that.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
You know much more about this than I do, but I read one commentator who maintained that Nebuchadnezzar understood this dream quite well, especially the part of including the part of that the kingdom of God growing to occupy the whole earth.
So Nebuchadnezzar's ambition was that his kingdom, Babylon, will or would last forever. And the text here talks also about the division of the last world kingdom, a mixture of people. Mm. And what do the people who live toward the end, what do they try to accomplish?
Well, they try to intermingle their kingdoms, but don't succeed.
In order to realize, again, the unity of one world empire.
Yeah.
And as they are busy trying to do that, it is God's kingdom that comes as an intervention.
And it's quite fascinating to hold this dream up against the events of world history, isn't it? Up to this point, anyway.
Yes. Now, there are people who would like to see these movements, these attempts to unite the kingdoms of the world today into one empire as limited to just one part of the world or one continent. Do you agree with that interpretation? Or would you say that most likely there must be worldwide attempts?
I would certainly go for the worldwide perspective. Certainly in Nebuchadnezzar's time, he was looking at the known world, and I think the dream spoke to his known world. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to our time, I think it's certainly inclusive of all the peoples, nations.
The story from this chapter teaches that God knows, reveals, and holds the future. Yet another teaching may be equally important, and this is the fact that God protects his remnant when their lives are being threatened. In the story, we find that God even cared for the Babylonian wise men. I'd like to thank both Dr. Dave Thomas and Ken Bramlett for their contributions. Please join us next week as we continue to explore the messages from the biblical book of Daniel. Thank you all for tuning in. For Probe, I'm Zdravko Stefanovic.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at this same time for Probe.